vacations, and then everyone broke for Christmas. So no point me coming home for Christmas and sitting in MIQ. So I carried on working. And then the UK variant came out, the COVID. And so December 22, I got a call. I was the only one in the hotel, this five-star hotel in Saudi, that the show was over. But then to make it worse, it wasn't a matter of just getting on a plane to go back to Dubai and come to New Zealand. It was like Saudi government had shut their borders down. So I was stuck in Saudi. And there's not much to do there, especially around Christmas. So luckily, a week later, they opened the borders for foreigners to get out. I got back to Dubai just before New Year. And then I was sort of looking at the MIQ vacancies, and there was nothing until March. And that was looking pretty scary. The production was sort of saying, well, we'll give you a hotel, but, you know, it's 3 months sitting in a hotel. But luckily, my partner back here was able to sit on a computer and just keep refreshing, and found one for night for January.
Wow.
And so I got out just, yeah.
Oh, that's a real win, bro. And well done, and good to have you back. And I was so excited to sort of hear that you are there back in the horse world and on a gig. And I don't know, I just kind of, the last few years have kind of really left me wanting, and it just needs so much attention right now. It's been great to have you back. And look, the podcast has been a product of 20 years of sitting in the back of the truck talking to people, and kind of felt like my department particularly was underserviced. And all of a sudden I turned 50 and realized, bugger, I've been doing this for 25 plus years. and also some of the young folks coming through are sort of, every time we say something, they listen, and they kind of like are trying to pick my brains for something. And so if we thought we'd start Stuntstruck podcast to kind of give 18 to 30 year olds particularly
Can I just pause it for a second? My speakers are really bad. I'm just going to grab some headphones.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's fine. I haven't started yet, so you just go. Okay, Well, for those of you who are listening in today, my guest today is Steve Old, who's a horse master, horse guy, just an all-rounder in the business. He works both ends of the industry, from the front of the camera, the back of the camera. He's been there since I met him on Lord of the Rings. And I get Steve to talk us a little bit about that. And I think he's just looking for some headphones at the moment. But a guy that I'm
laying into my computer. Oh yeah.
Guy that I'm very excited about, and I've seen him develop and grow, and as much as I have developed and grown.
The speakers are gone. Hello, hello.
Yeah, can you hear me all right? Testing 1, 2, 3. Is that better?
That is so much better.
Isn't it? I'm sort of a believer in headphones now. Somebody bought me a pair, and I thought it was my hearing, but I think it was my speakers and stuff like that. And hey, look, I just think, you know, like, as I was saying, you know, it's an area that's been, I think it's been underserviced, and the response has been really good. And I've completely gone out of my way not to talk to, not at this stage, to the mainstream people. I want to talk to what people who I perceive as outsiders of the game, because I think they're actually the ones who are succeeding and people actually have a life. You know, it's not chasing the regulars as some, because there's lots of podcasts out there that they just attend on, and they you can listen to them. So I just really wanted an angle on, I just want people just to talk frankly and even swear at each other if they want to, but not that that's happened, but just to talk about their experience. And so when I started this business of podcasting, not that it's a business yet, still a stunt coordinator, I contacted a guy in the UK to sort of mentor me through it, who runs his own podcast called London Reel. And I had these big ideas, and he just said to me, go and do something, go and talk about stuff that you know something about. And because I really like the concept of podcast. And they said, well, I know about stunts. Well, let's start off with that. And and that was the birth of Stunt Strikes, about starting. I've recorded, so I'm just going to get it straight into it. And this is Augie Davis from Stunt Struck, ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And look, today I've said in past podcasts how the significance of a show called Lord of the Rings in my career, and many people, not just in stunts, and in other departments as well. What I found about Lord of the Rings, particularly one thing why I go back to it, is because it's a great reference in point in time. 20 years ago, Fellowship of the Rings was released, and today's, I'm talking to Steve Old, who I met on Lord of the Rings. Now, before I get Steve talking, I just want to give you a little bit of a background. When I came into Lord of the Rings, I was halfway through pre-production on principal photography, and the show was already running. I was just stepping out as a stunt coordinator, and I went down there just to participate as a stuntee. And also, it was a great time as a stunt coordinator starting out to go and meet new people in the business. I find that as you grow, one thing I've observed is that the people I looked up to, as they grew in the business, they took people with them who were growing with them as well. And I figured if I was going to start out in the business, that I needed to meet new people who are essentially going to grow with me. And some of the very people that I'm working with today, I met there on Lord of the Rings. And I've mentioned Tim Wong's name as a guy that has been a significant part of my growth. And something that's happened of late is that last week I went in to a funeral of a good friend of mine who's a special effects technician, Paul Verrill, who died in his workshop. But again, he was a chap who I met on the side of the river on a show called Mysterious Island. And even then, on the first day and the first week of working with him, there was a sense that this guy was going to be around for a long time. And I've seen him grow in his business, and as he's seen me grow. And 25 plus years later, here I am burying a veteran of the industry. And I'm not saying I'm burying somebody today, but I've watched Steve Old from up close and from afar, and I've seen the successes and also the struggles of what it is to be a HOD particularly, and also an impact of a show like Lord of the Rings and being thrusted into the limelight and our go-to guy. When I first met Steve, firstly, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you.
Thank you.
When I came into Lord of the Rings in 2000, you're all well entrenched into the program and of Lord of the Rings. How did it all start for you, and what were you doing prior to Lord of the Rings, and how did you end up on the biggest show that was being shot at that time? And also, you know, everybody says it had never been done before. There was no template for how to do three movies all at once. You know, what was your role in those early stages, and how did you get started into it?
Oh, look, it was, it's quite a funny story, actually. Going back a step, I'd helped a friend out. I was living in Melbourne. He was an event organiser, used to run big bike rides, 6,000 people for a week. And he got a new job for a charitable organisation, much like the IHC here. And he thought, you know what, I'll run a horse ride, but didn't know one end of a horse to another. He knew about logistics, getting people from A to B to C to D and so forth. So I was managing a Tri-Fleet clothing manufacturing company in Melbourne. And he said, you're a farm boy, you must know about horses. And so I volunteered and helped out organising, how far a horse could go each day, what we do with a horse at night, how we feed them. And so we ended up with 330 people on this week-long horse ride around Victoria. Worst weather in 40 years. The yards that we'd hired, supposed to have come with a four-wheel drive forklift, that broke down. So we had to manhandle them every day onto trucks and set them up for horses. Anyway, end of it, exhausted. I loved it. I'd love to do this in New Zealand. My mum had passed away with multiple cirrhosis. And I thought, here's a great opportunity to help out a great organization, the MS Society. So came back to New Zealand, sat down with the MS president, said, hey, here's a concept. Do you want to give me a job? And they said, look, we've got no money, Steve. We'd love to be the benefactors of it. So my Aussie mate and I formed a company, a great event company. I organised a route around Coromandel, put out 150,000 brochures around Australia and New Zealand, just went hard out. I was a one-man band, got 480 people on this horse ride for a week and raised 40 grand for MS. So I thought, okay, let's do it again the next year. So next year, there's only one shower hire company in New Zealand. I booked two units, two containers. A week before the event, the guy rings me up to Steve, sorry, double booked, you can only have one. I thought, mate, so I had to make do. After that, I decided to build my own showers and started my own shower business so I wouldn't get caught out again. So that carried on. When they were building Hobbiton, I sent a letter down to production and said, I've got these great showers, I want to offer them to you guys for nothing, for 2 weeks, just to get some feedback. So the UPM then was a guy called Nick Corder from the UK. He rang me and asked me all about these showers, how they work, how much they cost to hire. And at the end of it, it was just sort of off the cuff before he hung up. He said, hey, why did you build them? And I said, yeah, I run this horse road. I think it's the largest in the world. And he said, tell me about that. So I got talking. He said, well, gee, we've got a horse department. There's 20 guys, 70 horses. But we've got scenes where we're going to need 250 horses. We've got no idea we're going to find these people, what we're going to do with them because there's no hotels. Do you want a job? And I said, yeah. So when you're next in Wellington, I said, oh, it'll be me next week. So I put on my suit and went down to Wellington and totally overdressed. And by the end of this meeting with all the HODs, I was in charge of this horse department.
I'm absolutely gobsmacked. Wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
Crazy.
Those toilets. Hey, just out of interest, where are those toilets now?
Oh, showers. I sold them on. Someone else is still running them. And I ended up actually hiring them onto the job when we were down in Lake Clearwater. So
there you go.
Yeah. Funny story.
Hey, coming into that role, I mean, was that the first time you were on a film, like production of any kind of sort at all? I mean, you probably have seen cameras around and stuff like that on some of the world you've hung out, but actually in terms of a motion picture environment, was it the first?
No, I'd done some extra work as on Hercules and Xena.
Oh, of course.
So I'd been in that environment, seen it, and that was it. So when I did get down to Wellington, my job was not necessarily the horse department, but organising, running auditions for over 1,000 people around South Island and putting together my A, B and C lists for those battle scenes and training them.
And jumping forward a couple of years, you know, one of the things that, and I'm president of the Stunt Guild at the moment, and our very first meeting before we registered happened in Twizel, and that was a really significant moment for me in Twizel. We were shooting on the principal photography, and we were shooting one of the charges for the final battle of Return of the King, I believe, the paddocks. And I've told so many people about that week, particularly how I stood there in front of 200, I don't even remember the horses. I mean, you'll tell me how many numbers of horses we had down there charging on the fields, on the Palinor fields. And you know, we were taught to react in these characters. And I could just remember standing there and seeing these horses charging it, and all sense of character went out the door when I just had to run away. And I could hear George, get the fuck out of the way, just drop that flag, run. And we actually had a photo afterwards. It was such a significant day and the stunt team, and Dave Norris, who was also the first AD that day, he was so pumped about what we've just done, and just having all the presence of those horses and these stunt people, and we had the military as extras as well. And it was just such a proud moment. Can you just highlight for me how many horses would we have had down there during that period? Because I've told people, oh, we had, I think, must have been over 200. And says, nah, you wouldn't have had that many. How many horses did we have in riders, for those riders of Rohan?
Yeah, it was close to 250.
Wow.
Was a maximum number that we had. So yeah, it was pretty significant. I don't think it's been topped. Yeah, that was, and you know, 70% would have been females or fake wigs. The guys just weren't around, you know, that could ride.
Wow. Steve, you know, you come from a farming background, and so, you know, with that organizational skills, you know, and there was very few people in the business doing horses professionally. And if they did, they probably didn't last as long in the business. Some are still around. What was it like sort of pulling together? What, I mean, not just in films, but even back then, pulling these people from so many different riding backgrounds, because, you know, the horse world is very, they can be very opinionated of each other. It's a bit like martial arts, you know, this guy does this and that one does that, and they're very good at critiquing each other. What was it like just bringing those bunch of people together and making it work?
It was challenging, and I sort of, you know, I look at every other department. If you're in lighting, you do it a certain way, and everyone does it that way, according to the HOD. But you're bringing people from so many diverse areas of horse riding, and getting them into one just for that common goal is very challenging. It comes down to managing people, resolving conflict, and just to get everyone going for that common goal. Because one person is from a dressage, thinks that they're better than the other person who's, you know, a farm rider and might not look as good, but brings other skills. So it's really about letting everyone pull and work together. But, you know, you've got to be on top of it.
Wow. The, I still think back on it, and, you know, like, how did you, I mean, I saw you during that time. I didn't think you did a lot of it, but you did. I mean, just the way the schedule went. You did some stuff in front of the camera. You did the stuff in behind the camera. You know, you're the business guy who had to kind of like pull all the pieces together, logistics. And as we realize on some of these bigger movies, you just cannot do everything. How did it kind of work for you? I mean, when you were on the production, were you torn? Did you want to be in front of the camera? And did you get a sense of what we were doing and the significance of what that show was going to be globally? I mean, as Kiwis, we don't fully tend to appreciate until we go overseas and somebody says, hey, you worked on that. And, what was going through your sort of mind at the time? You want to be a performer, you want to be a businessman, you want to be a manager, and how did you balance all that?
Look, I think the enormity of the film didn't hit me until, you know, we really got into it. I'd never heard of Lord of the Rings. And just, you know, I just had no sense of how big this was. So in a way that was good. I think otherwise, you know, it could be quite frightening as to what, you know, the responsibility that it kind of just I'd walked into. Yes, I did want to be in front of a camera, I think, because I just love horse riding. And on the odd occasion, I did. And I got that later on in other films. And doing that was so much more relaxing. You're getting paid to play cowboys. You know, what a great job. But then there's also part of me where I'm quite critical. And I like to do the best I can. And that's, I like to know what's going on and running it. So I'm happy doing that as well. But it's nice to be on both sides.
Yeah. Hey, you know, and one of the, and I know there's a lot that goes on, and there's a lot in between the lines of our conversation. When did, during Lord of the Rings, did you get a sense then maybe whatever direction you were going, that this thing might grow into something much bigger than, you know, providing showers at Hobbiton? You know, was there a plan starting to formulate then about where this will go beyond? And because, you know, straight after that, you know, when we did Return of the King, you know, you had just finished Samurai as well. And I've just seen momentum grow and you build great relationships with people. Was that happening right then at Lord of the Rings in the early stages, you sense? Or when did that sort of start to, you know, find its legs?
I think, yeah, during Lord of the Rings, I think there started to get a sense that we were doing something quite big. and that there would be more to come. But I think it was more when I went on to Last Samurai and teamed up with the Horsemaster, Peter White, who, you know, in a sense, they were 20, 30 years ahead of us. They had a good structure. We had six Spanish trainers. They knew what they were doing. We were working it out on the go. So it was really nice to be under somebody else and supporting and learning so much at the same time. So that was good for me.
No, I remember talking to some guys who were there, horse guys, and you know, my involvement with Samurai, I was really at the, I didn't work on the production part, but you know, having to host Nick Powell for a little while, who's the stunt coordinator on that show, and some of the people that I've worked with, and just coming from overseas and bringing that overseas experience was really fresh, you know, and I could see where we aligned in terms of philosophies and approaches, and I could also see where they've just coming from an industry where they've had time, I guess you could say, you know, experience of that they could fall back on. I think the Spanish guys particularly really were the talk of the town amongst the horse guys I spoke to. They were, and the way that, I mean, if you watch it now, I'd have to be honest, I use Last Samurai as a great reference film for so many horse action sequences. Just, it was just beautiful. It was so well done, and I'm so proud that it was right on our back door, and pissed off that I never got a credit on it, that I never worked on it. But hey, what was I doing? You know, Lord of the Rings rehearsals. And and since then, you know, I've seen you in front of the camera in costume. You've done some things, and leaving New Zealand to go and work on. Because you after Samurai, you went overseas and did several productions. I know you went away to do Hercules and several others. But before that, you know, one of the things that I've always observed, you know, there's lots of talented people in this, but in the film industry, particularly in a place like ours, and the way our industry is structured. Clearly, right from the word go, I've kind of seen you as a, you've got this balance between a really great horse guy who's chosen some really clever productions, but there's this sense that you made this a business. You know, it had to function as a business. And as I did when I started in the game, I realized the only way I could sort of get through this if I had to like make sure that this is a business, it's not a, because you're dealing with big numbers, you're dealing with big people and people whose livelihoods are and mortgages are on the line. Was that because you came into Lord of the Rings really as a businessman, and then all of a sudden you got given a job, which is in itself a business. How has that been? Have you found a balance between like being the creative guy, coming up with ideas, finding the right people, making sure the horses and the animals are trained, and also making sure that the business flows? And how does that work in your head? Do you feel you have to choose between the two? Like, I'm the creative guy or I'm the businessman? Or is it both?
Yeah, both really. I think during this whole time of filming, so I had my events on the go. I stopped doing the events in 2000, you know, the big horse rides, because I was just totally immersed in Lord of the Rings. And then I traveled overseas. I had a stint with Medicine Sans Frontières over in Sudan as a logistician. Just wanted a break from the film industry, just to help people. And then I came up with the concept of putting together a trek the length of New Zealand as a business, but also as a fundraiser. So it would be a stage at a time, starting at Cape Reinga and eventually ending up in Bluff 13 years later. But adding in some mixed mountain bikers and walkers on a trail with horses. So, you know, pretty challenging sort of concept and getting those three groups of people together. So I would run that as an annual event in March, but it also then I'd be overseas doing a film and trying to do both. And it kind of got to a point when I left Warhorse in the UK to start Hobbit, and I had to walk away. So I did five stages, I think 5 years getting it down to Taumarunui, and it just came, it became too much. So I had to make a decision. Am I going to do one job really good or two not so good? And that's where I decided to walk away from the events and focus on film.
Wow. And, you know, I'm just going to sort of pause for a moment there and just say, look, I remember when I was dabbling in the very same thing as an adventure guide and as a business, you know, I got to the point where I wasn't doing either very well. I love them both.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And it was I remember my career in stunts just taking a complete, just got momentum the moment I started to say no to other things. And I felt like people took me seriously. And it's like, and I've often found, you know, over the years, you know, to build a case for me saying no, what happened. And I realized that I respond to people who prioritize the business first.
Yeah.
And I've seen that over the years as I've hired people, those who are putting in the yards, who are, this is their number one thing. I'm invested in them because I want them to stay. You talked about Peter White, and I knew who he was before he came to New Zealand. You know, he had this, he's the legend in the game, you know. He was there at Gladiator, is that right? You know, he was, and I've spoken to stunt people who worked with him. How did you, not so much with Peter White, when you went overseas, how did you stack up in terms of what you were hired for? Was that natural for you, or did you feel, because you've done Lord of the Rings, you know, you've got the big credit, you've done Samurai, two of the biggest horse films of that era behind you as well. You know, what was the response like from overseas horse people? And
last Samurai, I wrapped everything up, sold all the assets, all the horses, and had a big auction in New Plymouth. And then Pete rang me and said, "Hey, Steve, I'm doing King Arthur over in Ireland. Look, mate, there's probably about 3 weeks writing work. So you get yourself over here, pay you £1,000 a week. And, you know, just paid holidays. Come and flat with me. Got a great apartment on the beach." So I said, "Yeah, okay, I could do that." So I fly for 36 hours, get to the apartment. And he comes and says, "Mate, you're in costume tomorrow at 5. "Oh, really?" So I go into costume and I get stripped down, painted blue, and I've got a loincloth and a wig, and I have to lay in this on the wet grass next to these horses that are rearing in a carriage, and then go into a fight scene. And I, you know, it's something I hadn't really done, you know, riding a horse, but that was, so it was all a bit new. 3 days later, the stunt coordinator comes to me and said, he'd fired one of the guys who was Tristan's double, Mads Mikkelsen's double. Mm-hmm. They'd had a falling out. He says, "Steve, you look like him. You could be his double." It's all right, okay. So off it went from there. It was very much, I just kept my mouth shut, and I was working with guys, you know, they were ex-Marines, top-end stunt guys. And here I was thrown into the mix. And so it was really only Pete and I knew that I was just a farm boy on a horse, and off we went.
That is so cool, and it's a story that I've heard in from other people about their own experiences. But it was about being there, about being present, you know, and the nature of the film industry. You know, the show must go on, and we'll. I remember a Kiwi who went overseas, and they didn't have a horse double that day, and he'd never ridden, and never, let alone bareback, and. They needed somebody on that horse quickly, and he said, "I rode the 20 meters and I made the cut." So it was like first time on a horse before he fell off. that is amazing. And you know, and you and I met up again on the Warrior's Way, and here were your own show. You're the horse master. You've got a bunch of guys and girls from all over in cowboy gear, your falling horses, you pulled together a bunch of people. What's that? That was a good, what? Would it be, you know, what, 10?
2002, what are we looking? 2007?
2007. So that's 7 years since whatever. And Steve Old was our go-to guy, and you've come back with all this experience from overseas, and you were nailing it. I mean, this again, we didn't have the 200 horses, but still, we needed to put actors and a whole bunch of people in some pretty awesome sequences on that show. Where did those people come from? Just take me back. Were they leftovers from Lord of the Rings, or the new people that you had brought into the system since Lord of the Rings?
Pretty much. The biggest challenge is that because of work, there isn't that continuity of work with horses in New Zealand. So that was a new crew. I had to go for, we wanted certain looks. I think I had, Len Baines was the only guy from Lord of the Rings who was my sort of right-hand man.
Yes, of course, what a legend.
The rest were all new to film. I'd start with a blank template and get the job done. So that's what we did.
And the it's a good point you touched on then. And is that the film industry changes so much, even in the course of a production. What's made you stay in the business? You've come in and out. You've had a certain amount of control about your in and outs out of the industry, but because nobody knows what you're doing half the time. You could be away overseas for 2 years and then all of a sudden you pop up, or but nobody knows you could be growing tomatoes for 2 years. But one of the things that I've noticed, it's just to get consistency of people and experience and stuff. What keeps people in? What keeps people? Why do people walk away from a department like yours? And one of the things that's really hard sometimes, you get some really good horse guys, and I know that they love the business, and there's such a, and we're bridged quite nicely with the stunt department as such, but I don't, there's no difference between the two departments. I think, you guys never stop anyway doing stunts, because we close on set, you still got to go feed the horses. The risks are still the same. You still got to ride them. How do you keep people? Because one of the things I've noticed is that I think the horse department has lost some good people to just mainstream stunt work, because, they get more work there, and to try and recruit them back into horse work, they might find some of the things a bit too dirty and manual, but that's, how do you keep good people? You've got to keep them working, obviously. And in a horse department has to have this really strong hierarchy system for it to function and function well. Yeah. But at the same time, you've got to allow people to grow. How do you keep good people, and what drives people away?
Oh, look, I think it comes down to, everyone's got to earn money. And a lot of people, when I start looking, it's finding people that have got that flexibility of time to come up, to drop everything and what they're doing, leave their homes, leave their livelihood for 6 months, 1 year, 2 years. So you're not always, it does make it challenging, because there might not be another job for a year, 2 years, 3 years. It's just the way it goes. So I guess you've got to make it as attractive as possible. And that's where, that's part of my job is getting a decent return from my people, from the production that makes it attractive enough for them to commit everything and jump in boots and all.
Wow. And overall, how much of the, when you and I did Lord of the Rings, how much has the department changed? From my side, things hasn't changed much, because, animal welfare has always been such a key part of the industry. Yeah. And as long as I've been in industry. So there's not much change from that point of view, but what other forces are impacting on the industry that, people might come in and walk away? I think one of the problems I have is that too many people have opinions about your job.
Yep,
and
yep.
It's, the overall changes that are going on in the industry, are people leaving? Or has it still got enough to bring people in?
Look, I think the biggest challenge, you've touched on it, is the animal welfare factor.
Mm-hmm.
It's now, we horse falls are now no longer done. AHA, everyone against it, so your Pete Whites, the Spanish guys, that's their deal. They don't do horse falls anymore. So it is changing a lot. There's a huge emphasis on animal welfare. You've got groups like PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, who believe animals shouldn't be used in film. Even though they're treated better than any animal, it's just, you're up against it. So you've really got to dot your I's, cross your T's, and, you know, if it's a hot day, have an umbrella over your pig, that sort of thing, to keep shade on. You do put yourself out there and you do become a target. So that's one of the things I've found.
Steve, how does that work with in a country like ours and around the world, you know, the rise of hunting and fishing shows? On one extreme, you've got hunting and fishing in some pretty, you know, blatant, raw, explicit scenes, you know, I know it's done for real, you know, you've got that one part. Yet on the other side, you've got a filmmaking environment where people get treated better. I mean, the lunches we have alone, and, you know, is this just because that there's money involved, or is it or there is a genuine need for that to, you know, is there genuine concern for the animal welfare, or is it only targeting those that have the money? I mean, because you've got smaller productions out there who need to do those horse falls to get people to come and watch their shows. It might be the only exciting thing that are on some of their shows.
I think in the time that I've been involved in the industry, you know, 20 years, it has become a much bigger issue. Like, to highlight this, I had a scene in Desert Warrior to prepare for, where I needed some millions of ants would attack a lizard. The lizard had to, which cut to the lizard, it would be dead. I couldn't use a dead lizard. We had to have a prosthetic lizard. And I had to make sure I had ants that weren't going to hurt the lizard, so they couldn't be venomous ants. But we wanted the biggest, you know, biggest ants around. Another scene I was planning for was a falcon hunting and getting a snake, but it had to be a rubber snake. So therefore I had to get one of my things I was thinking about was, okay, how am I going to get this falcon to fly and pick up a rubber snake? Because they're naturally not going to bother. So it just makes it so much harder, but it's just the way it is.
You're one of the few people in departments that are actually the most pragmatic and most practical people I know, because you're animals, you know animals better than anybody. And you're the best conservationist in that sense. You look after your animals well because they're your livelihoods. And it just feels like some of these things are being dictated to from outside, or outside your business. And it kind of saddens me a bit hearing what you're saying. And look, on that note, I just wanted to give a bit of a shout out to you as well. You know, Steve is more than just a horse master. And as I've been alluding to, he does all this other stuff, you know, ants, snakes, you know, wherever you want. If it breathes and it's not a stunt man, you know, that talks back. He's a bit of a legend at it. I'm just listening to you talk about all the animal welfare stuff is, you know, got my brain going. I just kind of remember having to do a fishing scene, and I love fishing. And we couldn't pull a real salmon out of the river. We had to get a rubber one. And I remember just taking 15 minutes of a production minute to discuss a scene that was going to last, you know, less than two, three seconds. Anyway, that's the world we live in. Does that sort of stuff drive people away from the business?
I think, well, it's like anything, you have to adapt. And it's like if I, I'll pull together a team of guys and girls to ride horses, and there's rules, you know, you can't be doing this to your horse. You've got to do it like this. And it's treating everything with kid gloves and being, even if they think it's over the top, well, that's the way you do it. You've got to be pragmatic. You've just got to be very careful. And because a lot of people don't understand, but you just have to do it the right way and take your time. And so it does for some people who are used to doing things differently, they don't handle it. And I've always said one of the key things to success is being able to adapt to change and, you know, and just keep moving with it and not get upset.
And as you did on that day when you arrived in Ireland and think you want to help Pete White out and you paint yourself blue and laid in the mud and also doubling the dude. And I noticed over the years your role has adapted on different shows. I know you've been stunt double on King Arthur and all sorts of things. I've seen you drop a horse, do a horse fall. And you're one of the people that's continually been evolving, and I'm kind of fascinated to see what, you know, and I'm fascinated really to see what the next 10 years is going to do. One of the things I'm concerned about for me is that I've been doing the film industry for 25 plus years, and I always look at the papers and goes, I wonder if I'm employable outside this business or somebody would hire me. And yeah. and is it, you know, why don't I know? I just need to step outside of the business for a little bit to bring back some of that original fresh ideas that I brought from outside the business when I first came in, because I don't always want to go to Google and YouTube to learn something, because that's become a bit of a lazy way to approach things. And it's trying to find new things to learn, and that's going to add value to my involvement in the industry. Can I just ask you a little bit about this last thing that didn't work? You're in the Middle East, and please don't go into the details of the job if you know, for privacy reasons as well. You were going over to look for camels and a whole bunch of other animals that, right? Is the process the same pretty much in terms of from finding horses for a film? I mean, you're going to a different country, of course, there's cultures and all sorts of things. Can you just touch a little bit about the journey to, you know, to going to a completely new continent and running a department?
Yeah, look, I think the process is similar. You do have to adapt. So coming from New Zealand into Saudi Arabia, obviously there's a language issue. So the production had hired me an assistant, nice guy, computer guy, not an animal guy. But the best thing was he could understand every word I was saying. So I just had to keep asking questions and, you know, to try and find out information. And it was really just getting out, knocking on doors. Hey, we're going to the camel races, looking at camels, talking to people, drinking lots of tea in tents, learning to ride a camel. I was disadvantaged in the sense that I had a camel trainer supposed to come out from Morocco, but he got delayed because of his visa. So I never got to meet him. So I in the meantime, I'd found someone who was going to be my camel agent and had him lining up hundreds of camels. But you're also coming in at it from a view that the director wasn't sure what coloured camel he wanted. Would it be a black one, white one, brown one? The size of the camel. And I was also going through lots of horses to get that up and running. So working with the Saudi military on that. Lots of interesting things trying to find, you know, you'd think there'd be, I needed 50 donkeys that we could ride. But everyone laughed when I go to markets asking to buy a donkey because they didn't have them. And you think, geez, you'd be everywhere. But So I love it because you've got to be creative and you're working with every department. There was possibly 1,000 birds I needed in cages. yeah, just so much room to be creative, which you don't get in a normal job.
No, I see. Hey, and on that, I mean, it seems to me that, you know, to be able to do that, to be doing showers and then going into coordinating the biggest show that was running at that time, and then back to back going into Samurai, your ability to adapt, was that the rural upbringing you saw? Was there other things that, you know, this entrepreneurial adept, the ability to adapt, just roll with the punches? Where did that come from? Can I just ask, when you started on Lord of the Rings, how old were you? Were you in your 20s?
Lord of the Rings is 99. I would have been 30, mid-30s.
Really?
Yeah.
You're doing pretty well for you. Are you in your 50s now?
Yeah, 53 now, I think.
Struth. Yeah. Wow.
Stop you counting, but yeah.
Young bucks.
I think a lot of it came from, you know, growing up on a farm. My mum had MS from an early age, so my brother and sister and I, we kind of took care of her as well. So there was that kind of independence from an early age. I left school and worked for a livestock company, and one of the guys working there was in the territorials. So I joined the infantry territorials, and I'd spend 50 days a year playing war games. So I had 4 years of that, which was really good because it just gave you that, you know, you had to listen, there was discipline involved, and that, I think that was something that was really important. I was also challenged where I was born with Pooh-faced hip disease. So my left hip was crumbling away, which meant it was quite painful to walk after a while. So I've always had to, you know, push a little bit harder. Thankfully, you know, I had surgery, and, you know, 10 years on, it's great. I've got no pain, so I'm able to, and my legs are a little bit longer, so I'm not walking in circles so much. But yeah, just pushing through. And I think also just not letting anything go to your head, just getting on with it and being thankful for what you got.
Yep, and I concur with that. And I'm very grateful for the fact that people like you were around when I started. You know, when I came into Lord of the Rings, I'd just done one film to Crooked Earth, and I think we had horses on that show, and I think we bought a whole bunch of your thoroughbreds that weren't working at Lord of the Rings, and I think I fell off a couple of them. Okay. And it's beautiful animals, and when Zane Wiener asked me to and Barry to look after the two towers and then Return of the King, you know, I was there was a sense that I had, if I arrived, I guess that somebody would ask me to coordinate these pickups, you know, and I had no idea what I was doing still. And it was probably evident to a lot of people who experienced it. It's weird now that I look back on it and that my journey was very similar to a lot of people who are coming in at the same time, that Lord of the Rings was a really important job in that respect. And I think it validated me, and I'm sure it validated a lot of people. And I talked to somebody like Arthur Matthews, who transport coordinator now does, and he was working in transport in that time. And even Reg Gibson, those people. So many people are out there. Hey, I want to say that, as a fellow HOD, you know, I've sort of watched what you've been doing, and I've been very quietly proud of what you've been doing, you know, out there. And sometimes it feels like our two departments, especially in a small country, can feel like we're working against each other sometimes. But, you know, but at the same time, you know, I wouldn't want to be doing this with anybody else, you know, because, you know, like, yes, I've worked overseas, I've done all that, but somehow because of the way our culture and our system works here, it's kind of like they get some of the frustrations that I have to deal with. And at the same token, that some of the people that you work for are actually my people too. And the people that work for you they work for me as well. And there's this genuine interest in wanting to just make it work. And I'm hoping that there's more cohesiveness between our two departments as we go further forward. And because I've certainly, you know, the horse department, there's so many people come in and they get very, what I've found, and this is a real tribute to you, is that you're very good at sharing what you know. And that says to me that you know what you're on about. And in terms of, you don't tend to go outside the knowledge that some of the people that you have in your team. You're very good at promoting some of the people that are in your team who may be more experienced than you. And I don't know, sometimes they can work against certain people. But I certainly find in your case that you've been very good at promoting those around you. And
I think it's I think the benefit of working internationally, you know, I came from when we did Lord of Rings, there was conflict between the two departments. I think it was, you know, from the beginning it wasn't handled properly, but and I think what I've done over time, you know, as we did on Warrior's Way, it's the best person for the job that should do the job, and that's how it works. And I'd like to think that the horse department works, you know, the stunt coordinator is the overall charge, and they make the decisions, and that's how it works. That's how I like to perform to get the best job done. So I think, you know, and the same with Hobbit, you know, I'd sit down with Glenn Boswell, and, you know, it was kind of like he'd just say, look, you've got it covered, that's fine, as long as you've got those communications going in, and you can work so much more effectively and safely.
No, I would totally agree. And I think that's a luxury actually in the business, to have people talking the way we are and going into production with that sort of open mind. It's, I think deep down, that's what people actually want to do, but there are certain forces that are impacting on people. And I think a lot of that was, and as I'm talking to you and as I've watched you, and I think having that, you came in with some really great leadership skills, it seems to me, in the business. You know how to lead. And which is, I think there's a lot of talented people in my business. There's a lot of talented stunt people, but there's very few leaders in it, and who can see much bigger than just falling down the stairs in the bigger picture. And I know for a fact that, you know, if I can tell when a person's 100% when they're operating at 60, they'll still do the job, but they're just days when, you know, I know the baby didn't just had a rough night last night and you were up, you know, change the nappies, and it was some of my guys, you know. That's, and I see that, and that affects the way that things are often done. Hey, look, I won't keep you too long, but I just want to say thanks to you. And you know, we've come up to 20 years now of Lord of the Rings, and can you tell me just before we do, you know, and it doesn't have to be Lord of the Rings, you know, what has been the highlights of the shows you've done? I mean, you've done the big ones, you know, War Horse, you've done The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, you've done Hercules and Last Samurai, and the list goes on. And you've been out there away, King Arthur, was it? You did King Arthur, we did Warrior's Way, and their jobs that you've started, they never probably rolled film on or it stopped, you know. Tell us some of the highlights for you. Give us three highlights of the jobs that, you know, where kind of everything came together and you kind of used it as a reference. For me, the charge in Twizel was one.
Yeah.
You know, when I talk about horse films that I worked on, there was a moment clear in my head. I could still hear it today, and I would love to be able to put other stunt people in that same environment where they can have a moment in there, a memorable moment. What is it for you in terms of as a horse guy?
Yeah, I think that's definitely one. All the 250 horses charging across Twizel, and I think one memory there was sitting on the tracking truck, and we had, I think it was 10 across, 10 wide and about 20 deep, and the guy second away from the truck, I just watched in slow motion as the saddle slipped and he slowly rolled and fell under his horse and curled up into a ball, and I thought, this guy is toast. And miraculously, not a scratch on him. He stood up and he said, wow, do I get stunt money for that? I said, no, you should be bloody fired. Do it yourself properly, you know. Things like that, and just getting away with it, because so much can go wrong. And, you know, while you've got to put on this face, it, it's all under control. You know, there's so many variables, and you know, you know in your job, of course, that so many things can go wrong here. And when you get away with it, I'd also touch on, you know, 10,000 BC, being riding up in the mountains above Wanaka and on a horse and catching slaves, and then going to Dune 7 in Namibia, the same thing. Just these amazing experiences that I've been just so fortunate, you know, like you say, from having some portable showers and, you know, having all these great experiences, you know, you can't buy that. So, and the Warrior's Way, that was, again, number 8 wire, those big horse falls that the boys came up with. You know, we were really, that was all new stuff for us. And we created something pretty special. So, yeah, I'm pretty proud of that.
That's so awesome. And lastly, you know, when for the new kid, for the new person, or for not just a kid, for anybody who's a horse man or woman out there who's watching the business, goes, I want to do that. You know, that I'm going to say to them, don't come to me. I'm a stunt coordinator. I love doing horse films. That's why, and I love working with horse masters who know what they're doing, and horse people, horse trainers who know what they're doing. I'm not that guy. But from a person who wants to get into the business as to do horses, both as a stunt man or woman, or as just to work with animals on, how do they start? What's the best process for them to do that?
Oh, look, it's really, how do I start? Jeez, this business is who you know, isn't it? Mm. It really is. And I've found if people approach me and they're proactive and say, hey, I really want to do this, I'll remember and give them an opportunity if I can. And really, it's the people who quietly just get on with the job and not want to be the boss after a week. That's how it works.
So good. You know, enough said, mate. And and thank you for that. This is, and just for those of you who are listening, as we wrap up tonight, so Steve Old, been there, you know, horse master, animal coordinator, animal wrangler. He lives here in New Zealand. We've known each other now 20 years. The first 2 years, I knew him better than he knew me, because he was working in a much senior position than I was when I first worked him. And until I was able to sit in the same room and chat with him, then that probably was when we really got to know each other. And we've had other people come in into that relationship that has worked in a more senior than us, like you mentioned Glenn Boswell. I worked with him on The Hobbit. I was assistant to Glenn. And and I think mutual names like Chris Weir and a whole bunch of other people that we worked with over the years. Just before we go too, I just want to acknowledge Len Baines, who's an amazing horse guy who was really key to the success of Lord of the Rings. And one person that Steve was able to, you know, one of the good ways that you can, I often make calls on people is by the quality of people you have around you. And that was just a really quality guy that I have a lot of respect for. And the fact that he followed you all the way through to last summer. I don't know where he is, but if you're listening, then hope you're retired and having a big smoke of a big cigar somewhere. But I'm hoping that you end up on a show soon with us. Anyway, hey, well, Steve, thanks very much, eh? And we'll keep talking. For those of you listening, send us some questions too, and I'd love to get Steve back and see what the next phase of the journey is for now. This is All Get Stuntstruck.
Thank you so much, Augie, and thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, thanks, man. Hey, dude, that was brilliant, man. That's it's really, it's cash, it's great, and really, one thing I love about podcasts is that I don't think it's what people say, it's how they're saying it. It's real. I get so many awesome feedback. This American lady rang me up the other day and just said, look, I just like the tone of your podcast. It's not pretentious.
Yeah.
I feel like I can trust the people you're talking to. And it's really cool. Hey, what's your plans today, man?
Oh, I want to go to the gym, but we can on level 3. And I've actually got an audition with Lord of the Rings in a week's time to ride a horse. So we'll see what happens.
What's happening in that horse department? I know Wayne's not on set, is he?
No, he's not. What's happened is Zaylee Bullen, who I worked with on Warhorse, she was one of the trainers. She's come over as Glenn Sutter. I thought it was Glenn Boss. He's running it. And she's kind of, she contacted me and she'd seen some footage of what they had and asked me to put together a group of potential riders. So I've sent for a list and they're having, he's making the decisions as to who he wants to ride horses. So I've put my name forward and we're going to have a bit of a session in a week or two, a couple of weeks time.
Oh, look, all the best with that, eh? Because I think that it's been a bit messy. It's certainly very corporate, the show.
Yeah.
And I think it's been a bit of a shock to a lot of people's systems. And, Paul Shapcott, who was removed from the show. I'll just stop recording here for a minute. There we go. And there we go.